is behind the news and you are getting us live across the country. If you are somewhere in Hoa at the moment, you are getting us on Volta Star Radio. And somewhere in the Oil City, you're on Twin City Radio together with Radio Centra, Cape Coast. And as usual, I'll be picking your text and comments on 026-441-8767. And we want to move on to our first story. Striking polytechnic lecturers today met with the National Security Coordinator, Gbevlolate, to discuss ways of finding a solution to their grievances. According to POTAC President Francis Atintonu, the meeting with the National Security was very fruitful. However, Stanti Todu said an earlier meeting that POTAC had with the Education Minister had nothing to do with their strike. Stanti Todu has joined us on the line and we want to look at what they looked at and where they are presently with the strike. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Naturally, when you are on strike, people will be looking at you meeting with the Labour Commission or Fair Wages. This time it was with the National Security. Why?
I think with Fair Wages and POTAC has blood for now, as I can see. And so it is not possible for us to sit together face to face to discuss. In any case, the last meeting, they told us they had no mandate to discuss with us. So we dispersed and subsequently met in Accra Poly and declared an industrial action. I think the second party, the National Security Coordinator, took over. And we are fine with him. And we are assuring our listeners that with the trend of events, if it continues this way, I don't think that the week will end and the strike may be called off.
Is he stepping in as a mediator of some sort or discussing security issues in relation to strike? Let's learn exactly what you discussed.
Security issues in relation to strike action. You see, because the students are not in the classroom and there's a likelihood that things can go wayward. They can hit the streets everywhere in the region. And I think that is a security issue to him. And so he has stepped in as a neutral body to be able to mediate and then solve the matter amicably.
So for you, what were the core issues at today's meeting?
I think the core issue for now is our market determination of our market premium. And I think we had a fruitful discussion with him. And I think he is also open and straight to the point. Our members were very happy with him. So we believe that if the trend continues that way, then at least by the end of the week, things will work well for both of us, both parties.
Was the invitation from the National Security, or you thought maybe that was another way of resolving your issue, so you went to meet them?
No, it was from him, the National Security Coordinator.
Yeah. So you are saying that it was fruitful. Are we talking about the strike ending very soon? You've mentioned maybe by the end of the week.
That is what I'm saying. I'm saying that if things continue to, if the meeting should continue to progress the way we had it today, if the trend will follow the same pattern, then I think by the end of the week, we'll reach an amicable solution.
Are they going to lay your concerns before the relevant bodies that you see to your pay packet?
Yes.
So they will be doing it for you?
Yes, and doing exactly that.
Mr. Atintonu, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Mr. Atintonu is the president of Polytechnic Teachers Association of Ghana, that is Francis Atintonu. But the other concerns coming up relate to the fact that our institutions charged with working on labor issues then failing, if others should step in, or we can say that they are all state institutions meant to ensure peaceful coexistence. Well, we have a labor analyst and also an arbitrator joining us on the line. Good evening, Senor Javin.
Good evening. Good evening. And good evening to your listeners.
What do you say of the meeting with National Security today? That is an angle people did not expect at all in the strike.
Well, I believe that it tells us two things. That labor is a very important aspect of national development. And when you look at the definitions and or the definitions of contemporary national security, it has to do with the well-being, the sustenance and well-being of people, and under these circumstances, the citizens of a nation. And therefore, it is not too surprising that the National Security Coordinator will take interest in these issues that seem to have played for quite some time in the country. Another aspect that we can look at is to wonder whether national security is the appropriate institution to step in, and whether they have to step in at all when we have a specific organization, as you yourself you have alluded to take care of labor matters. Should we be saying or thinking that they have failed to actually address the matters and therefore other institutions should come in? I do not think so. So basically, I can say that, rightly or wrongly, everybody wants this to end. And any institution that believes that it can more or less implore the teachers to go back to the classroom, they are at liberty to try to convince them to do that, while the appropriate state institutions will be looking to resolving the matter.
So as an analyst and an arbitrator, you think that any institution at all or individual can step in and help the process?
Well, I do not think so. The fact of the matter is that when this happens, for some reasons, we can say that there has been an interference. But you see, it is not an easy situation to just give a straight answer to. For example, National Security invited the teachers, and you cannot tell which aspects of the matter they were dealing with. So you cannot jump to the conclusion that they are interfering. But it may look as though once they have been invited by, you know, another institution apart from the specific state institutions that have the mandate to deal with labor matters, then it means there has been an interference. So it is not clear cut. It depends on the matters that they discuss. And of course, when you are talking about national security issues, you are talking about confidential meetings, and so we cannot disclose exactly what they went to discuss.
So you believe it was right for Mr. Francis Atintolu not to say exactly what they discussed, but still to be on the fringes of it?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Because when the national security invites you for a meeting, you should know that whatever they have the mandate to act in the interest of the state, and they have the mandate to act to protect all of us. So especially national security issues should never be issues that anyone should even dream about talking in the public domain, because it may end up endangering we ourselves who they are trying to protect. But I believe that the National Security Coordinator is a very, very, very competent and a very competent person who knows that he cannot interfere in this matter, as though he may be wanting to do the work of the right institutions that are mandated to handle labor. I would want to believe that he would want to look at the aspects of this strike that will have an effect on third parties.
Well, let's come to this particular issue. We've raised it before, but now it is showing that really is becoming a characteristic of this year. The trend of seeming labor unrest, especially with an election year too.
Yeah. Can you come again with the question?
We are looking at the trend of strikes as we have them now. We've raised the particular issue that they seem to multiply during election years. And said if things were handled well, certain things will not arise. But now we are beginning to see a trend. What do you think can be done?
Well, at the beginning of this year, especially when in the first week of the year, petrol prices were increased. I remember saying that it would be very prudent for employers, and employers here would also mean government as employer, would have to quickly look at their figures and approach unions and workers' representatives about ways to mitigate this so that it does not have to come up at the bargaining table. Unfortunately, it looks like this wasn't done. Now, the unions would then approach management with, you know, their slice of the cake, or proposals of the slice of the cake as mitigation measures. And where, especially in an environment where we are having elections, they know that they have the upper hand to, or the bargaining power, you know, to be able to inflict some, you know, quite some deep worries for the employer, then these things would happen. But be that as it may, I think that this matter has gone on for a long time because the parties have not completed the processes. For example, if you are in negotiation and you deadlock, by law, what is the next process? You go to the Labour Commission, and then you have a procedure there that allows you to go through the process and the procedures, and then conclude the matter. This is a simple matter of a negotiation that has broken down. But a lot of things are being brought into the fray as though those are the real issues at play. I do not believe so. So the simple matter here is that negotiations were being held. Parties have deadlocked with specific positions, you know, and they need a third party to determine the matter and give them a binding solution. Okay. And I think that is where they have gotten to. Oh. As to whether the strike is right, the strike is illegal, whether employees on strike have to be paid or whether they don't have to be paid, whether the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission has the mandate as an employer to declare a particular strike action as legal or illegal, those questions really are not here or there. The issue is that there is a deadlock at negotiation. Within 7 working days, that deadlock should have been reported or conveyed to the National Labour Commission so that the right procedures are followed from there. Okay. And it's as simple as that.
Well, we want to thank you very much. We'll be exploring a lot more labour issues in other programs. But for now, thank you so much. Sonia Jabin is a labor analyst and also an arbitrator joining us on the line. It's Behind the News. You are live on Garden City Radio and also on Radio BAR Sunyain, Radio Savannah Tamale, and Yura Radio Boga. Moving on to our next story. Hundreds of Ghanaians took to the streets today for a march to promote peace in the December elections. The march was organized by the Movement for Peaceful Ghana based in Cape Coast. They later converged on the Haas Park in Accra, where they presented a petition to government. The petition was received by Deputy Chief of Staff Alex Segbefia and the Director of Communications at the Presidency, Koku Anyidoho. We have Koku joining us on the line now to look at the issues. And also Afeni Donko, who is the Director of Operations of the Movement for Peaceful Ghana. But we are moving to Afeni first, and then we'll get to the Deputy Chief of Staff. Good evening, Afeni.
Good evening, my brother. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Well, what was your main motivation for this match?
Actually, let me first of all greet your listeners. Movement for Peaceful Ghana came in existence about 3 months ago. Our headquarters is based in Cape Coast. In actual fact, after realizing that some politicians and leaders of various political parties do come out with utterances which are not helpful to the nation, we decided to come together as a group to make sure that we preach to Ghanaians, we demonstrate to Ghanaians that Ghana belongs to all of us, and that after 2012 elections, there should be Ghana for all of us to live in. So we decided as a group to come together so that we make sure that we get peace during and after the 2012 elections.
Yeah. Many will say that a lot of concerns and calls have gone on. Do we need a match to drive the point home?
If you should come and look at the numbers, you would realize that our motive is really being welcomed by a lot of people. As I stated, we started in Cape Coast, and that was our ancient capital. And we marched with a lot of people, you know, numbering about 3,000. When we came to Accra, we realized a lot more people are appreciative of the fact that they want us to preach for peace. I believe that there is the need for all of us to be aware that, yes, we know the word peace. How do we go about it? I believe also, and that MOPEC also believes that it takes the initiative of people to make sure that things are realized. So we know that a lot of people know about peace, but what are we doing about it? That is the reason why we decided that we come together, let people know that there should be peace before and after the elections. So, my brother, it means that we are aware of the word peace, but who should make that initiative? It is we, members of Movement for Peaceful Ghana, who should take that lead.
So have you formed a group purposely for this election year, or it's been in existence for some time?
Yes, we started this movement, as I said, late December. And this is our second march, peace march. And we intend to go to the various, you know, regions that we have. We have started, and we hope to enroll a lot more people into the movement.
Well, you said that it was quite good for you having so many people. How do you hope to sustain it?
Yes, we hope to sustain it because looking at our numbers, day in, day out, we get a lot more people who are willing to be part of the group. In fact, I became surprised to see a lot of people who moved from Cape Coast to Accra today. There were a lot of people that we never thought that they would be part of our group. But because of the sensitization that we gave to people in Cape Coast, we told the radio stations in Cape Coast that whoever believes that there should be peace in this, our nation, should come and join us. And we saw a lot of new people who came on board. Let me also put on record that Cape Coast is hosting, you know, refugees from the neighboring country, Ivory Coast. We know the pains that they go through. We know the sufferings that they go through. And we don't think that any Ghanaian can be able to go through those pains. And that is what we want to prevent. So we believe strongly that at the end of the day, whatever we're doing will be embraced by all politicians, especially the leaders, so that we would always forge ahead, maintaining peace for our dear nation, Ghana.
Will you be reaching out to them directly, apart from the march?
We have been, you know, grouping. We have had a series of meetings as to how we should go about with our march. And our headquarters is currently based in Cape Coast. What we do is that we go from community to community to let people know that there isn't any benefit in violence. There isn't any benefit when people try to hold their throat. Mm-hmm. So we have been sensitizing ourselves, our communities in the central region. We go on radio to talk about peace. We invite journalists to come on board. We invite stakeholders, especially those who matter when it comes to elections, to come on board. Let us also say that we met with Central Regional Police Command, DCOP, and the Kofi, and he made it plain to us that our movement seek to support the ideas of the police, because he believes that when there is peace, the police will be able to also relax and go about the other duties that they ought to do. So we believe that they're getting a lot more people on board, the NCCE, they are trying to reach them, the Electoral Commission, because we believe they are the major stakeholders. And we are also combining, educating people as to the need for them to register in the biometric registration. So we are doing all what we can to make sure that we maintain the peace that we have. And we have the hope in the presidency that there will be peace. We also spoke about the security agencies.
Mm-hmm.
We know that everybody now and then talks about peace. Security of this nation belongs to them. It is in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And we are also telling them that there shouldn't be the notion that they're going to intimidate anybody. Give us the free will to exercise our franchise and then come out from wherever we voted peacefully, so that when the vote is counted, whoever emerges the president of this nation, we will all accept it. But our major target is to the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that this country does not belong to politicians. It belongs to all of us. Some of us are politicians, others are not.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be guided by what they say. We want them to be a bit responsible when they see crowd, so that they don't go up here and talk about issues that would not bring about peace, issues that would rather kill the interest that we have as Ghanaians.
Yeah, okay.
We want them to be talking about peace and peace and peace and nothing more, nothing less.
Aika Fenyi Donko, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much for the.
That's the director of operations of Movement for Peaceful Ghana. They went on a peace march earlier in the day. But now on the line is Koku Anyidoho, a deputy chief of staff, director of communications at the presidency. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
You received the petition. What do you find in it that you think it's so important for us presently?
Well, good evening to your listeners. It's not a petition. It's a message.
Uh-huh. And what exactly are they saying?
Well, the young men and women and the elderly folk who came, looking at the wording of the message, is just to congratulate the president for continuously reiterating the fact that as president of the republic and commander-in-chief, he will ensure that Ghana is peaceful before, during, and after the election. So their message just jives with what the president has been saying all the while. And so it's just a message that is in sync with what the president has been saying. So very much appreciated and grateful that there are a group of people in the country who support the president's position as regards maintaining peace, that Ghana will not bend, Ghana will live to give glory to God, that Ghana will continue to live for the Better Ghana agenda to continuously unfold.
Yeah. You have to work on all fronts if you are talking about peace. How do you hope to have your arms stretched out to others and let them also embrace this message?
Well, I don't know. I don't seem to understand exactly what you're talking about, but the president has continuously made the point in all his speeches since he became president, and especially last year and this year. The point has succinctly been made that he will make sure that we come out of the election peaceful and united, and that he inherited a united nation or a peaceful nation from President Kufu, and that God forbid that under his tenure, Ghana goes ablaze. So there's a point the president has been making every now and then when he has the opportunity. So what the peace movement is saying, and that is why it's a message and not a petition, the president appreciates their message, that they also support whatever it is that he's been saying over the period.
Yeah. Well, from where you sit, what do you think is the single major threat to this peace we keep talking about?
Oh, well, collectively we must protect the peace that we have. I'm not about to go finger pointing. All we have to do is that collectively just ensure that we all make sure that come December 7th, we go to the polls. I mean, we're about to start the registration process. The EC, the NCC, and all those, all the other responsible entities are advertising and making us understand that we need to go register come the 24th of March, I think, to early April, and ensure that we have our names on the register. And if you're not eligible to vote, don't go there. And so all those things, you know, incorporate the message of peace, that if you don't deserve to register, don't go register. So it's not an event. It's a process. And so all of us have to just put our shoulders to the wheel and ensure that we collectively make sure that we don't drop the peace that we are enjoying in some blaze of fire.
Well, Kokwanyido, we want to thank you very much for your input too.
And for the opportunity. And have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. That's the Director of Communications at the Presidency, Kokwanyido. But we'll be picking from the police what they think about it. And the police is entrusted with the country's internal security issues. However, the institution should always inspire confidence in the populace. On the other hand, they expect the populace to offer the necessary assistance and cooperation to make their work successful. How is this symbiotic relationship going as the country prepares for the elections? DSP Sifas Asa is the acting public relations officer of the police, and he's also joined us on the line. Good evening, DSP Asa.
Good evening, Kingsley.
You listen to the effort being made by a section of the populace to help promote what you should be doing as an institution. How do you see this effort tying in with whatever you want to do?
Very laudable, just to say the least. That is what the police administration is calling for. And that is what we have been calling for all along, that there should be peace and people should aggregate all their effort towards pushing peace as far as this year's elections are concerned, and peace generally in the country for the rest of the time that the Almighty God will allow human being or mankind to live on this earth.
But generally, how ready is the police for the electioneering?
Very ready. We started putting measures in place back in the year 2010. Where we were dealing with the peripheral issues as far as security is concerned for the 2012 election. And as we got closer to 2011 and now we are in 2012, we have descended into the nitty-gritties of security as far as elections are concerned. We held our first major stakeholder meeting on the 5th of January, and ever since then moves are being made and efforts are being made to put things together towards gearing the preparation towards take of things. So the police are getting things ready. We are putting measures in place. We are liaising with the necessary and stakeholders so that we'll be able to forge ahead, to be able to provide the security that we all need.
Yeah. Would you describe the level of cooperation as the best as of now between you and the public, I mean?
Between the police and the public,
yes.
It's good. It's getting better because we are coming from very far. There was a time that there was a high level of mistrust between the police and then the public. We have been able to salvage some image for ourselves. This has earned us the confidence and the trust of the public. And as I see it from what we've been doing, the kind of successes that we have been able to chalk in our fight against robbery and crime in general, we can only attribute it to the partnership that we have struck between ourselves and the public, and it can only increase.
Yeah, you speak about mistrust, and yet we keep listening around, and you know that some people have a form of it still, and directed at the police. They don't seem to trust everything the police says or any action the police take. What are you going to do about this one?
We have made a substantial gain as far as savings and image for the service is concerned, mm-hmm. as far as winning the confidence and trust of the public are concerned. I must say that we wouldn't be able to achieve everything and have a 100% winning back of confidence within the short time that we have made the effort. Definitely, we still have some people who will be having some misgivings about our activities, about our operations. But that is not to say that we have not made any gains. We still have a few police officers whose conduct and activities will engender the kind of mistrust and lack
some
of
animosity
that a few mm-hmm. members of the public could have. We are still working at them. We know about the image cleansing campaign that Mr. Porteriakwe launched somewhere in the year 2010. The efforts, the achievement it has made up to now, mm-hmm. and we know that has, to a large extent, contributed to the police winning back the confidence of the members of the public.
So do you foresee any major challenge along the line?
What the only challenge perhaps we foresee is that we expect that other sectors and segments of society will also come on board. We have had a cause to complain just quite recently about yesterday about the conduct and attitude of some media houses as far as reportage on police is concerned. We think that there seems to be a kind of a hate campaign in a section of the media against the police, and we have made our case clear. We have called for a kind of a cessation to that, as it's not in the interest mm-hmm. of the nation. And that is a kind of a challenge. We are also expecting that the public will also come on board, conduct themselves in a more acceptable manner, so that we shall together forge ahead and have a more peaceful election. The police have had experiences since 1992 from five different elections that have been held largely successfully. Without anything so much untoward happening to mar the integrity of the election.
So do you have contingencies in place in case of any unforeseen occurrence?
This is a security agency, and when we have the National Election Security Task Force inaugurated, we take into account everything that is likely to happen. We forecast deep into the future, to see what are likely to happen, so that we make plans to forestall them in case they do happen. So there is no cause for alarm.
Okay.
Once the National Election Security Task Force rises from the ground, you see that everything will be okay. So we assure the people of Ghana that we are in control, except that they, as our partners, must also play their part, because without their part being played, we can't have the kind of peace that we want.
DSP Sefasata, thank you very much for your time this evening.
It's a pleasure.
That's the acting director at the Police Public Relations Directorate. Behind the news, you are live on Radio Ghana, and coming soon, combating the politics of insults and bringing the parties to bear responsibility. Behind the news, live on Unique 95.7 and also Ubuntu 96.5. And to our next story, over the past year, the issue of insults in Ghana's political discourse has taken prime place in many discussions. The political parties, as a symbol of their commitment to clean politicking, have signed on to a document to help the process. Over the weekend, President Mills reiterated a call for politics devoid of vilification. A similar call has been made by MPP presidential candidate Nana Akufo-Addo on his Hope Tour. The point of contention, however, is how the parties are living up to their promise. What are the key issues of their campaign? Are they really standing out? Joining us in the studio today to explore the issue further is a member of the MPP communication team, Asamoah Gyamfi.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You listen to the effort by others to help promote the peace, and you heard about the march. You've also listened to the police. Do you think, really, we are going to have a very peaceful electioneering?
Oh, definitely. I think we're going to have a very peaceful electioneering campaign.
Yes. When we ask about that, quickly, we ask about the party's commitment, not just in signature, but in action.
All the parties, particularly MPP, has been committed. Okay. What the MPP, we're saying is that we noticed from the previous election, that flag bearer was a subject of vilification and outright lies fabricated just to denigrate him. His principle then was that we should stick to issues and not retort back, but which we did. But the reality is that the NDC and Professor Mills benefited from such attacks to the extent that my own son, okay, at the age of 22, believed that Nana Akufo-Addo was a drug addict. He asked me this 9 January 2009, that, Daddy, is it true that Akufo-Addo is a drug addict? I said, who told you that? He said, he saw it on the net, and people were saying it all over. Now, right from that, we got to realize that the NDC benefits from insults, and we adopted the policy that if they attack our leader, we would attack the president back.
An eye for an eye, we've always said on this platform, certainly will make the world blind.
We noticed that President Mills is the benefactor when Nana is attacked. And President Mills will only come and say, let there be peace, stop him, so when he's attacked personally.
But let's ask this other counter question. At the leadership level, they say that there should be all the politics devoid of insults.
Yeah.
And yet you know that within the rank and file, it continues. It's even encouraged, unfortunately, on some stations and all. So how do you get the rank and file directly involved?
I can assure you. Anytime you see an MPP firing back, it is in response to an attack on Nana Akufo-Addo. And the reality is this. All the people who attacked Nana Akufo-Addo, all of them who said all kinds of lies, had been, awarded by President Mills.
Do you call it an award?
Yes.
Assuming
let me give one example. Victor Smith came and lied about President Mills, President Akufo. That he took a loan of $5 billion.
And assuming he's in
and now
a position.
He's in parliament. Now saying that he has no evidence. In any society, the president will withdraw that appointment. If you quickly said that all the gold bars at the Bank of Ghana has been stolen by President Akufo, he's a deputy minister. He went to parliament and said it was political talk. In any society where you want decorum to come, such appointment will be withdrawn.
Can you say that everybody on all sides of the divide, and especially within the two leading parties, can claim to be exculpate on these issues? Because some people have the mandate.
Judging from 2008, the attack was only from one side, and there was no response for 2008. We only decided to retort back after 2008.
It comes from only one side?
For instance, in our Manchebona rally, where Honorable Kennedy in Japan, attacked President Mills, he was made to withdraw by the flag bearer national chairman. I, sitting here, was ever punished by the national chairman when I attacked his opponent. He wrote a press statement denouncing me and called me to go and apologize to the man or I don't step in his house. Then because of that, anytime I'm on radio, I'm careful what I say. Because I know that my boss, when he hears it, will denounce me in public. Which of the people who have attacked Nado, President Mills coming to redraw it? Even on Manchebona, they still kept on saying things that were factually inaccurate.
Yeah. So I was moving on to even tackle some of the very tangible things that people want to know of as we get to elections.
Yeah.
What is the message that is standing out?
The message standing out, we are bringing issues. Nanado is promising free secondary education.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we are happy that this time, even the NGOs are throwing the question, asking us to demonstrate how applicable, how realistic it is, how we could finance it. That should be the line we should go. And we, anytime that challenge is thrown to us, we bend backwards to respond.
Are people buying that message?
Well,
you have been going around.
No, it will be bought based upon December 7, 2012. But we believe that secondary education should be free. That is the only basis or is a sine qua non to Ghana's development?
Anytime we ask about how it's going to be funded, yes, we are told that we have to wait. The costing is being done.
Yes.
Is it finished now?
The costing is, you see, the costing is being done as the rate at which it's going to cascade. Ghana's entire wage bill was $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
By the time Kufuor was leaving, it was $2.5 billion. Mm-hmm. As we stand now, it is $5 billion. How have we coped? How have we coped? Ghana's economy was 4.5%, okay? Or 4.5 billion, or mm-hmm. not 3.8 billion.
Yeah.
By the time Kufuor said it was 16 billion, okay? In 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means, our economy has the capacity to grow. And all of this quantum leap came without the discovery of oil revenues. So the question we should ask ourselves, what is the cost of leaving a large chunk of our people without secondary education, as against the cost and benefit of providing them secondary education? This is the vision of the Nakufuad.
Yes.
That the cost of not doing it is much more dire than the cost of doing it.
Yeah.
And that we will have to find the means to finance it. And he mentioned three. One is to expand the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Two is use the oil resources. And three is prudent economic, management of the current resources we have.
You spoke of the cascading effect.
Yes.
Now you've mentioned three different factors,
yes,
that will be taken into consideration when you have to do this. But the main concern being raised is that in 2008, the same issue of free SSS or SHS came up. So it was expected that by that time, at least, a rough calculation would have taken place, integrated the cascading effect you are talking about now, and we can
have that as 2008.
Yes.
The projection was that all we needed to do was to grow our economy, mm-hmm, by 1 percentage point more, and we can absorb it. But you see, now we are working at the cost of infrastructure, okay? The number of teachers you need, even the integration of vocational, because you see, when we talk of
SHS,
we are leaving the vocational technical aspect.
It should form part of it,
no,
because it's secondary level education.
That's right. And all of, there's a six-month committee,
mm-hmm,
three educationists, three economists, who are looking into it, so that we think through it. So by the time we are launching our manifesto, we will come and explain to the people of Ghana how it will be done. That is a major plank.
Previously, we were made to understand that you've looked at anything in relation to this, and you know exactly that it's possible. And now
it's
we have been told
no,
have
it is possible. No, it is possible because, mm-hmm, we've demonstrated to you, as I'm saying, that Ghana, mm-hmm, has the capacity to raise the money.
Mm-hmm.
If, for instance, we didn't have the capacity to raise the money, then you can say, hey, there's no capacity to raise the money.
Mm-hmm.
And life is about choices.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who vow that I want to have a graduate in my family. And we decide, particular ladies, we decide that he won't buy funeral cloth. Instead of going to the saloon every weekend, you go once a month, save money just to educate the child. And that is the kind of thinking Anadu is talking about. You see, isn't it sad that every year 150,000 kids below the age of 13 drop out of school without future? And what impact? And most of them end up as taxi drivers and truck drivers, who then do not know the science of driving and end up, you know, causing accidents. So we should look at all of these things. The benefit of having, you know, a secondary education as the basic level of termination of education. For even when you drop out at secondary school level, you can then make life for yourself. I, sitting before you, is a product of the JSS. I am not a university graduate. I am an SSS graduate. And I had it for free.
It's a JSS and SSS.
Yes, I had it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I am a JSS SSS graduate. In other words, I'm part of the people that were experimented in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we finished, there was a coup. The June 4th coup. Lehman had come in. The economy was not that good. And because of the sixth form system, most of the traditional secondary schools didn't want to absorb us. So the then headmaster, now Adenzi Kanga, decided that we should convert it into a secondary technical. So all of us came out of it. And that is the kind of education. As soon as I dropped out, I knew that I could make life for myself. I could educate myself. I didn't need a university degree.
At experimental level. One was good.
No, and I had,
so,
it, again,
you know.
I had it for free.
Mm-hmm.
My father never paid the school fees. My exam fees was even paid for me by the government.
Were you looking at the population back then?
You see, that this was done in three regions, three northern regions. It was done in the three northern regions. Okay? It has been free, and it's still free in the three northern regions. So how has that cost the state?
Mr. Jensi, let me look at one particular issue. And since you are mentioning the three northern regions,
yes,
and this one, I haven't been close to the microphone for some time.
Mm.
You've heard of the recent occurrence where some members of CHAS are threatening to even close down the schools. And I can say it didn't start yesterday, no, 3 years ago. It's been consistent. That is just adding something to what is already being paid. That is down south. And for up north, paying for all, it's always brings about problems. And now we are talking about taking the whole budget. Are we looking at something very realistic?
It's an issue of action that we had a government who felt that it is important to pay 650 million judgment debt in 3 years.
4 years ago, were you still paying that 650 million?
No.
But it was a problem.
No.
It was a problem.
No.
I'm telling you, 2008,
uh-huh,
check the records.
Uh-huh. That,
they were
judgment,
threatening to close
that,
down the schools. Woyome was not there. That is what you want to bring. But let's
no,
not
no,
go
no,
there.
No, no, no. 2008, the argument was this, that they needed to reconcile payments.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for one term, not for two terms.
But it still created
a
problem.
No. Please, there are two things.
Mm-hmm.
Two things here. Where at the end of every term, the headmaster was supposed to come and close the account before monies were given to them. And they had delayed.
Mm-hmm.
That was the issue then.
Mm-hmm.
This time, the headmaster had done that. It was done for first term, money didn't come. It was done for second term, money didn't come. There are two different things. You get it. The argument then was that they needed to account for the money given to them before addition would be added. That was pure administrative process. It is that the money wasn't there. In this case, they do not even know whether the money will come. So there are two different things. All we're saying is this. It is about a president or a potential president who is saying that when you vote me in, my focus is going to be putting in place policies that will put education first. Because it is not resources that build countries. It is human. It's not natural resources that mm-hmm. build countries. It is human resources that build countries. And all the countries, Singapore, Japan, Germany, all of them are what they are because they laid emphasis on secondary and technical education. And that's the kind of leadership Nanado is promising.
When is that manifesto coming out?
That should be around August.
Around August.
That's definitely
I'm
around
putting
August.
A definite date to it.
Yeah, around August, that is when the
with all the costs.
With all the costs and what we intend, how we intend doing it. It's not just going to be a 2-3 line sentence as the NDC promised. And I like why Ghanaians are now being skeptical. They were promised one time premium and it has not been delivered. And we like this kind of arguments, this kind of skepticism. It really puts us on our toes to put our thinking. We are even calculating how many physical infrastructures that has been put in place, the cost of those physical infrastructures, how long is it going to take us to build it, whether we can deliver it in our first term or mid first term or whichever. All of this thinking is being done because we know that if we do not deliver it in our first term, we're going to have problem, you know, moving into our second term.
Have you seen anything positive in whatever government is doing now?
No, I'm greatly disappointed that they
anything positive.
No,
that is,
I have not. A government that has taking 16 billion in three years, disbursed 7 billion, and has no single project to show for it, I'm disappointed. In an era where cocoa prices have gone up, we've hit 1 million metric tons, gold prices have gone up, and taxes across all board has been increased from not less than 100% to 1,000%, and yet there is no single project.
I'll come back to you, Mr. Asamoah Gyamfi, a member of the communication team of the MPP with me in the studio. He's still behind the news. We are hitting the line now, and joining us is Yawa Tinja, national organizer of the NDC. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, brother.
You've heard your colleague on the other side of the carpet. Certainly, you have some responses. What do you see?
Well, I haven't heard him much because when your guy called me this evening, I told him that I will be in a week midweek service. Sorry,
yeah.
And that I will not even have time to listen to your program. But I think the latter part of it.
The latter part of it, yes.
And he was just saying that we've taken about 16 billion. We have not been able to, you know, account for even a single project. You know, I think it is time for Ghanaians to, you know, match the MPP and NDC, you know, in an argument. I think we need to get our facts together to, so that they will also get their facts together. Then we will sit, and one by one, we come out with the achievement of these two traditions. And I think Ghanaians will be the judges, judging themselves. Because they look as if we are telling our story, they are also telling their story. If you look at the way he's talking, it means that they are always saying NDC haven't done anything at all. Anything. We haven't done anything.
But it's a working chance.
3 years. Is that possible, my brother?
I'm also asking, assuming he's saying...
needs to be very realistic. When you are making such arguments, you need to come out and say that, yes, we've seen that you've done this, you've done that, but you haven't done enough. But when you come out to say that we haven't done anything at all, nothing, we cannot maybe show one single project, you know, out of the $16 billion that we have taken so far. Is that realistic, my brother?
Yeah, so what would you say are the major things, at least, if assuming Mr. Samuel Jensi has not seen it?
No, my brother, but he has just said a lot of things that I did not. I would have maybe responded to some of the things that he said. But let me just take him to, you know, the countryside. He should just travel throughout the whole country and assess the situation himself. We will put out some statistics, you know, of our development project that we've been able to do so far. Talk of these schools and the trees. And when you talk about some of these things, they run out and say that you haven't done anything at all. Let me just give one example in my own constituency, that is Sinyane West. You know, we have a town called Odumase, which is the capital of the Sinyane West District Assembly. We have a senior high school there, where the senior high school was supposed to be a boarding school, but they were not having any boarding house. For the number of years that MPP was in power, they kept on promising them that they would give them a boarding house. Since we came about 3 years ago, we've been able to provide them girls dormitory and girls and boys dormitory. And we are not providing them with a library facility. What is he talking about? And all these things are spread all over the country. Go there and the people themselves will attest to this fact. So when they sit on radio and they start talking, we haven't done anything. You know, the people out there who have seen the development projects in their areas are just saying that these people are liars. I will not say it. But the point here is that let them be realistic. If you think you could have done something better than what we have done, you come out and say it. But don't just always say we haven't done anything, because I've heard a lot of their people say we haven't done anything since the 3 years that we have been in power, and that it has been a wasted period for this country. I don't think that is right.
Okay. Mr. Yabu Atinjan, thank you very much for your intervention on the line. We want to speak to Theodore Jebley. He is at CDD, Center for Democratic Development, Ghana. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, good evening.
We are having a discourse looking at the issues as they should be tackled and so promoting the peace. For CDD Ghana, what do you think?
Can you just feed me in, because I have not been listening.
We are looking at promoting the democratic culture, looking at the issues and still promoting the peace. And we are asking, CDD Ghana, how do you hope to contribute to the process?
Oh, well, CDD has been working with the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers over the years to basically enhance domestic election observation in Ghana. And this year, we have, first of all, we have engaged the media in what we call civil discourse on the airwaves. We have tried to, you know, get the media to understand what it means to preserve the peace by not airing provocative statements from politicians, you know. And so we've started that initiative for Kodio. And then in addition to that, we have lined up a whole, you know, gamut of activities for, you know, this year. on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the coalition is going to launch what we call is Ghana Election 2012 activities at the Teachers Hall. Now, it will include, among the activities that we have lined up, you know, is number one, we are going to be deploying observers to observe the biometric voter registration. You know, want to make sure that the process is fair, it is transparent, it is free, there is no intimidation. And so that, in fact, even just today, we trained about 50 regional coordinators, drones from all over Ghana. And we are deploying them to the regions to also go and deploy others, you know, to observe the biometric.
So you believe that supporting the process will help and enhance the transparency we want?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
In fact, it is crucial that every Ghanaian put his hands on deck.
Okay.
I mean, we cannot leave this matter to the politicians alone. Mm-hmm. If we do that, it will be at our own peril. Every Ghanaian must put his hands on deck. He must all contribute to a peaceful election.
Okay.
And CDD Ghana has set the pace doing that.
Theodore, we want to thank you very much for your time. That's Theodore Jebele, in charge of public affairs at CDD Ghana. But returning to the studio with Asamoah Gyamfi.
Yes.
We have to go, unfortunately, but we are promoting the issues.
Yes.
And still doing it without the acrimony that has characterized some of the discussions. How do we hope to do it so that at the end of it, Ghanaians will even applaud you, whether you won or lost?
We think that if we can move away from the politics of insults, then Professor Noh should stop awarding people who attack and lie. In fact, we are throwing a challenge to President Mills to withdraw Victor Smith's appointment to signal to the people of this country that he really means what he said on Sunday. Because he told it before Parliament that he lied about President Kufuor and he doesn't need to be awarded. But if that he allows that to go, then we will be on the watch out. Our principle is this. You bring issues, we talk about issues. You attack our flag bearer, we also attack Professor Noh.
That policy
we have not moved away from.
They raised issues at their rally.
They did not. They were full of attacks left, right, and center.
There were issues when the figures were being presented.
Figures? Those, you believe that they were able to build 6,250 schools in 8 years, which already marks up to about 250 schools per year?
Have all the figures to respond to them?
We have looked at it. If you say you have inflation of 8%, and yet you have issue with paying school feeding grants. There are arrears to police in your civil service, what you call single spine, arrears to teachers. You have issues with NHIS not being paid. You have problems, arrears to be paid to contractors. It's just like saying that you have $10 million, bank account, balance account, and yet you owe people $9 million. And say you are $10 million.
It's about Indian race something.
Uh-huh.
Is there no speck even of white in all the black?
I wanted to list what President Mills spent, President Rawlings spent in his first eight years. The physical infrastructure. It is physical infrastructure that opens the economy. We are talking about the roads. We are talking about the rail lines that they have promised.
We are talking about
the Eastern Corridor.
You are raising it, and certainly we'll find another platform here where
thank
we
you.
Look at all
thank
these
you.
Issues.
Thank
but
you.
I want to thank you very much for
thank
making
you.
It to the studio today. Behind the news, before we go, some of your tests here. It says Potag is suffering from indecision. They better go back to the classroom. Chrysanthus B from UDS War Campus. And Don Kosamo Bimbiku, we the people of this country are fed up with this politics of insults. May the Lord save us. And from Bongo Upper East, UEW Mampon, when will these strikes stop? Uncle Atta has sold Ghanaians. And this one from Mbab Thomas Bwipe, if the NDC ruling party has nothing for Ghanaians, it should stop attacking the MPP incoming ruling party. And AU Farouk Tamale, yes indeed, the POTA strike is unconstitutional. They must pay for the days they wasted. And from Daniel Masse Bolle, even when KG children hear that MPP will make SHS free, they pass and walk away. And Meta Samuel Yerukoin, Ghana is a peaceful country, and for that matter, no one should destroy the peace that we are enjoying in Ghana now. And Al Hassan from Sablegu, free SHS may be good, but there will not be peace in Ghana under the presidency of Nanado. That is what he thinks. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. on behalf of Bright Agama, Christopher Sleed, and Felix Kofi, my production team, together with Isaac Yawedu sat at the controls. My name is Kingsley Obinchere.